The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Lafondra looking to get close side of Font. Lafondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello. Welcome to another episode of the Elm Park Rules podcast, supported by Blue Collar Street Food. Coming to you after a very scary 2-1 loss away at Burnley, which is very apt given it's Halloween tomorrow. And I've been joined today to discuss this defeat by Matt Lansley.
Morning, Alex, and morning, everyone.
Are you more calm than yesterday yet, Matt, or are you still at the same levels of rage?
Oh, my God. I think I had 4 nightmares last night about it, as I thought I would. We're going to get into it, I'm sure, but Christ alive, it's going to take a while to get over this one for sure.
Yeah, nightmare at Turf Moor, Paul. And I'm not sure they'll be releasing a movie of this one, but it wasn't great, was it? It wasn't great viewing for Reading yesterday.
No, well, in some ways it was, but the last few minutes were horrible, absolutely horrible. And that wasn't down to their inability, which we will come in to later, but I can just imagine being in the car with you two. Lansley would have been losing his mind. Alex, you probably would have been as well, and I think completely justifiably, because as we come on to later, the referee had an absolute stinker.
It was one of the more interesting walks out of the stadium, waits in a car park, and journeys home. I'm not going to lie, though, I'm kind of glad we did have 4.5 hours to just absolutely vent, because it was certainly needed, I think.
Yeah, we'll come on to the reason for our venting at some point later on in the podcast, and we'll try and keep this relatively clean, up until that point. But yeah, the let's discuss the rest of the game first, and then we'll come back to the main talking point at the end of the podcast, shall we? So Matt, yesterday we lined up with Ince and Mate leading the line, and Mbengue came in yesterday and was playing at right back, Hoylett on the bench. It was a little bit of a mishmash, I guess, is probably the best word, of the defence again.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we're kind of, it's the situation we're in right now, right? But I think overall, the team as a whole, when you looked at yesterday, I think, to be honest, we looked very good on the counter with Mate and Ince up top at Swansea. It kind of made sense to bring them back in for a game like today, where we're going to struggle to have the ball, to keep the ball. You know, we're probably going to be playing counter-attacking football. So I think on an attacking front, it kind of made sense. It was interesting seeing Ajari back. It was good as well, because obviously he's been out almost since, I think, the start of the season, out of the starting lineup anyway. But I think, yeah, with the defence, we're going to have that at the moment, because we're obviously so, sorry to steal your phrase, Paul Ince, but down to the bare bones of players down back there. But I mean, I think the best thing, I think, was the bench. I mean, Paul, seeing, you know, a full bench. When was the last time we could say that we had a full bench?
Yeah, it's a lovely sight, isn't it? We can actually like mix and match players. We're not just putting on 17-year-olds. And some of them might be good, but if you're going to be doing that on a repeated basis, and especially at places which are tough place to go, Burnley. Oh God, these are so many cliches we're banging out already here. I'm really quite liking that. But yeah, it is a real positive, and it's kind of even better in some ways that we've got the break coming up in a bit for 4 weeks, because by the time we get through the World Cup, we should really, you never know, Reading FC, we could get another 4 injuries. but we could have quite a strong squad by then.
We could have, but it is Reading, as you say, so we'll never know. We'll wait and see on that one, I think. The start of the game, Matt, I think Burnley probably edged it, despite the fact that we were in it. I think they created a couple of chances early on, and the first big chance, I think, really falls to Jay Rodriguez. Holmes gets caught on the halfway line, kind of just with the ball, and he probably shouldn't do here. Mbengue rushes over. I think it's quite late on in the half, this chance, actually. And Mbengue rushes over, and he maybe should not slide in here against Zerore. And Zerore pulls it back to Rodriguez, who's about 9 or 10 yards out, and he blazes Miles over the bar.
Yeah, yeah. What I would quickly say as well on this was actually after we had another setback at centre-back with McIntyre going off with, he took a massive pelt to the head from a, I can't remember who made the strike, but yeah, he ended up going off. Don't know if it was a full concussion or something, but yeah, that kind of rejigged our back line further. So you had Mbengue at right centre-back, Iedom, I think, at left centre-back, or maybe it was the other way around. And yeah, when you're looking at that, it's always a bit kind of nerve-jangling. But yeah, I think the first half, Burnley controlled the first half, obviously, quite well. But I guess we knew they were going to do that. They're a good footballing side. It was just probably a case of limiting the mistakes, because you probably thought the way Reading were going to concede in that half was through a mistake. Albeit probably one does come from Holmes on the halfway line. Like you say, he's trying to stick it back. But Teller, to be fair, does really well from Burnley. He's bloody quick, really quick. I mean, nearly caught Lumley out in the second half as well, Teller with his pace, charging him down. But yeah, you know, I think we said it at the time, like, you know, chances like that, I guess you could say we were probably quite, maybe a bit lucky with, you know, it's cut back. He probably should have even, I think that was an approaching runner at the back post, which Teller could have stuck it over to. It was almost just like, I think he had three options Teller could have brought it back to. It was a chance for Burnley. It's probably one, if it goes for you, you're looking at it and thinking, we need to be scoring there.
I think that was another example throughout the game that, and we've seen in the last few weeks, how many times is it, like Paul Ince says after the game, that we're actually, the chances for the opposition are ones that we're giving away to them, rather than them actually having to work it in. Against top teams like Burnley are in the Championship, you can't stop that, haven't you? And
it's,
you're
like,
right.
It's just mistakes, McIntyre, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe McIntyre going off did disrupt the whole shape of the team a little bit. And against the quality opposition, those little things can make a big difference. And let's obviously hope Tom's back playing again soon and everything's all right. Because last time he was at North and had a head injury, it was not a good one.
McIntyre did go off in the midway through the first half. I think it was about 30, 35 minutes, something like that. After he went down, I think he actually went down twice. I think he went down once after a shot kind of flew into his face, and then he went down again about 5 minutes later. And it seemed to just be a continuation of the same injury. And it looked like the ball hit his jaw at quite a pace, to be honest. And he came off. And Mbengue, I think, switched to right centre-back. I'm not sure. I can't actually remember, to be perfectly honest, whether he switched to right centre-back. But Yeardom, Holmes and Mbengue were the three centre-backs, with Holmes in the centre. And, yeah, you're down to the literal, like, I mean, we're not even playing centre-backs, are we, by that point? We've got
Say bare bones, but you don't want to say
it. I don't really.
We've already used that one. What other one can we use?
But, I mean, we're playing a right winger, a right wing back. We're playing a left back, playing a right back at centre-back. We're only actually playing one centre-back in defence. It's not great. We really could do with Sam Hutchinson or Naby Sarr getting fit sooner rather than later, because at the moment we're like, you're just picking at nothing to try and pull together a defense. It isn't really going to succeed. And it's similar to last year where you're playing midfielders in defense and you're just struggling to keep clean sheets and struggling to hold on to leads, because you're not playing seasoned professional defenders there, which is frustrating. But I think Paul Ince did say that McIntyre should be okay for Tuesday. So hopefully he'll be all right, and he'll be able to start on Tuesday, and we won't have too much in the way of selection issues. I think, Matt, we we didn't really necessarily create too many chances ourselves, but we looked dangerous on the break in the first half. And I think the one moment we did have a chance was really early on in the game. I think it was about the third or fourth minute, and we had a corner which Loom headed, and it went a long way wide. And maybe he should do better from the header here.
Yeah, and especially when you're kind of playing a counter-attacking game, you know, you've got to take advantage of set pieces. You know, we've seen Reading this year being relatively successful and effective from set pieces. But, you know, you've got to be at least making something from these. You know, it's not about scoring every chance. Sure, you know, you're not going to do that. But, you know, you've got to make sure that you're being effective with these chances, causing problems, giving the keeper and their defenders something to think about, which, yeah, you're right. It's something that, you know, Loom should have done better with. But yeah, hopefully it's something they can change. Obviously, Loom's going to be out for the next game, but they can look at going forwards.
Yeah, Loom did pick up a yellow card, Paul, during the second half, and that gives him 5 yellow cards now. Probably not that surprising if anybody's watched him play this season that he's now picked up 5 yellow cards. He's going to be out for Tuesday, and I guess the obvious switch is just to bring in Fauna.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to have to be, isn't it? I mean, I'm not sure who else we can bring in. It's weird, isn't it? Because when we signed those two players between him and Hutchison, who would you thought would have got more yellow cards per games? It definitely would have been Hutchison. But actually, Loom has been just a walking yellow card. He just gets caught out quite a few times. He's such a mixed bag, but...
In Hutchinson's defence, he has been injured quite a lot.
No, he has.
Just to defend Hutchinson here on the yellow cards.
Yeah, that is true, but he still hasn't got that many yellow cards, as many as like we thought he would have by this point. I agree, he has been injured for some of it. But I think he's only got 2 or 3 yellow cards, which, considering there is Hutchinson bingo talked about at the start of the season, he's actually done okay. But Fauna, hopefully he comes in and does a good job on Tuesday.
So we go into half-time, 0-0. And, Paul, you've got to be really happy with 0-0 at half-time, I think, away at Burnley. They looked dangerous, Burnley, but they hadn't really tested Lumley particularly. And we did look relatively dangerous on the counter-attack. I said to Matt during the end of the first half, going into half-time, I thought, someone offered me like 9 or 10 to 1 here on Reading to win 1-0. I would probably be quite happy because... It didn't seem impossible that we could go on and claim a point or get all three, really, because they weren't completely dominating the game. And although they created chances, I think everybody was, in the away end at least, everybody was very happy with a 0-0.
Yeah, the thing about Burnley is they have a lot of possession, don't they? But actually, you're right, chance-wise, it was not a bucket of chances. It wasn't Lumley making save after save. It wasn't last-ditch challenges all the time. Obviously, the best one they had was the Rodriguez one, which maybe he should have done better with. But 0-0 at halftime, I think we would have all taken that, wouldn't we? I don't think that was a bad situation to be in at all. And like you say, it looked like we could go on and possibly snatch it somehow. But yeah, football.
The one thing I would say as well from the first half yesterday is that if you watched us play Swansea a few weeks ago, whenever it was, last week or something, the level that we were playing in defence was much higher. We weren't playing deep. It was definitely we were much higher up the field when we were trying to pull the ball away from Burnley, and we weren't defending in our own box as such, which that was good to see, because so many people got on the team's back for, you know, what was backs to the wall against Swansea, really. But I thought yesterday would be very similar, Matt, but the game plan certainly, although it was similar, it didn't end up with us playing quite so deep in our own half.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, we were much more kind of in the game. Like you say, Swansea was very sit deep, knuckle down, you know, batter down the hatches kind of performance. Whereas today, you know, we actually came out quite a bit, you know, pretty much at Swansea. The two goals we got were pretty much, you know, our two of kind of really are any real attacks really before the very, very end of the game. You know, yesterday we had chances in the first half. We had a few shots, you know, Mate even had tried one from the halfway line, you know, as the keeper was quite far off his line. It was a different performance. It was nice and refreshing to see, because I guess some people might say Swansea was disappointing. You know, we defended, I think, very well against Swansea, even though we conceded three. Maybe a bit harsh to lose by three or concede three on that day. But, you know, if we can come out and play like we did against Burnley yesterday, on more occasions this year against the better teams, you've got to think there's going to be chances there to pick up points going forwards against them.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because obviously we've lost against Swansea and Burnley and QPR now, having taken the lead against all of these teams who I think they all sit in the top six now. And we took the lead away against all of them, and yet we've come away with 0 points, which is very disappointing, but at the same time, also encouraging that we've actually managed to pick up point or, you know, go ahead in all those games to begin with. So there is some positive signs, despite the fact that we've actually gone on to lose those games, I think. And yeah, the second half, Paul, the first real moment of the second half was the goal. And it's another goal, which is, it's route one direct football, but I mean, no one really cares. It's a cracking piece of like connectivity between Mate and Ince once again.
Yeah, totally. I listened to the preview pod that you did this weekend at Turf Clarets, and they were saying that it doesn't really matter how you play, does it? If you're winning and scoring goals, nobody really cares because now they've had a big change of culture there. But yes, perfect, isn't it? Great flick on from Mate. Really good finish from Ince. I think like so many players would have panicked there, would have hit it into the goalie, would have tried to go around the goalie not to get it right. But yeah, he's been fantastic this season. And if anything, I'd say he's getting better. He had a little bit of a dip, but now he's come back again. And yeah, you can't do anything but praise Tom Ince this season. I think he's been brilliant. And the goal yesterday just kind of topped it off for him. And I think there'll be more to come and more assists as well.
And Matt, Yaku Mate yesterday, I think he's proving that he's probably a little bit of an invaluable piece, really, against these teams where we feel like we might not touch much of the ball and we're going to play counter-attacking, because he does win an awful lot of the ball in the air. And the goal kind of illustrates the fact that he is going to create chances for us.
Yeah, it's one of the things, you know, we always say about Yaku Mate. One of his best actual, you know, attributes is his ability in the air, you know, be that in the box, you know, knocking on headers from corners or crosses, or long balls up to him. You know, he's incredibly effective when the ball comes up to him. You know, we talk about, you know, how good Andy Carroll is in the air, but, you know, I don't think Yaku Mate is actually that much worse than Andy Carroll. And I guess the thing you get with Mate in games like today is his pressing ability, his pace, you know, because he's incredibly quick. He's quick, he's strong, you know, he's almost perfect for when you need to play like this. And I kind of think when we go to or play against teams like your Swansea's, like your Burnley's, that, you know, we know they're going to have most of the ball, I'd almost probably say he's probably number one striker to be starting, because I guess, you know, I said we weren't in the game that much against Swansea, but it was effective against Swansea when it was needed to be. And yesterday he set
the counter-attack up goal then as well, didn't he? So
he did. Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, I could almost see when we're playing, you know, the better teams, I'll say, you know, we'll probably see a combination of, you know, Mate and Long, sorry, not Long, Mate and Ince. Long might come in, but it'll probably be Mate and Ince, and then probably the lower teams, you're probably going to maybe see Zhao come back in because of the individual quality.
How good is it to see Yaku back in the team there? Because I was really a little bit concerned that Paul Ince wasn't going to play him for some reason. I don't know what that was, but there seemed to be some kind of issue about picking him when he was fit. And now he's come back, and like you've both said, he seems to have a real impact in matches. And maybe that's worked out well for Paul Ince. That's exactly what he wanted, was that impact on. So yeah, fair play to everyone there. It seems to be working.
I think definitely there was definitely a selection issue with him. We as fans all think that he's best on the right, and that is his, you know, best position, and not as a striker. But actually, he's proven to be very effective as a striker in this kind of system where we're playing with not a lot of the ball, and he's able to just utilize his strength to win the ball on the counter attack, and it seems to be working so far. So I kind of agree, Matt. I think that we might see Zhao starting less and less, especially away from home, and might see, you know, Mate and then long subbing in for Maite late in games to kind of keep that system potentially. So we went ahead 55th minute, 56th minute, and Burnley tried to put pressure on here for the next 10 minutes or so, and it did pay off. They scored after 66 minutes with their substitute, Benson Manuel, getting a goal from outside the area. Paul, talk us through the goal. What do you think of it?
Well, first of all, it was a tricky header for Mbenge to get away, the header. But maybe in an ideal world, he heads that away a little bit further. But I think the strike from Benson is a good strike. It's not the best strike I've ever seen. He doesn't hit it like a Patriot missile or anything like that. But I think Lumley would have done well to save it. Now, I know you two slightly disagree on that one, and that is fair enough. But I think it's a bit harsh to say on Lumley he should definitely save that one. Or like,
I think...
Well, I do think... I'm just going to say, it's like, I think he gets some stick sometimes for like goalies in general, for like these shots from outside the box. And some of them, maybe he should have done better. But on that one alone yesterday, I think it would have been a little bit harsh to have a go at him about it. But you go on, Matt.
I think the biggest thing with Lumley at the moment, and when you look at kind of long range shots, you know, we've had this with Raphael and even Luke Southwood, you know, they seem to have a real problem saving shots from range, and kind of was it a good strike? Would it have caught, you know, Lumley off guard yesterday, you know, striking on the volley like he did? Possibly, but you know, there's obviously something that's not quite right with Lumley with shots from range, because he's now conceded, you know, three goals from range in four matches, you know, one against West Brom, at Swansea, and again today, you know. And in reality, like, I thought it was a very good strike. I thought it was right in the corner, but it was only right in the corner because Lumley gets a hand to it. You know, it's not right in the corner. It's not hit with the most amount of pace. You know, like, has it, like, I'm not trying to slam Lumley with, you know, that he should be doing better this season, because on the whole, he's been okay. I don't think he's been earth-defining, earth-breaking, but he's been perfectly fine. You know, he's a good championship keeper, I'd say. But when you're 1-0 up away from home against a team like Burnley, when you've got a savable, or probably a shot that you could save like that, he's just got to be making that, and he's got to be, you know, tipping that around the post, in my opinion.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Yeah, you could be right there. I mean, it's hard to know, isn't it? It kind of... So I feel it's a little bit harsh. I think Lumley's been quite good this season. And maybe that's because the expectations when he came in were really quite low. Let's not pretend that, you know, everyone was a little bit fearful with seeing what Middlesbrough QPR fans have said about him. But what did you think about it, Alex?
I mean, I was a little bit annoyed that Lumley's conceded again from outside the area. But it's one of those where you think it's happened... Like Matt said, three times in four games now. And I think he probably should do better. It's a struggle to kind of like be frustrated at Lumley too much, because ultimately they probably were going to get a chance. They probably would have, you know, scored eventually. It's difficult to keep a clean sheet away at the highest scoring team in the league. That's kind of the reality of the situation. But that being said, I think the shot is... not that strong. He's done well to keep it low to the ground. Like, fair play to Benson there for managing that. But I don't think it's an incredible goal or anything. And the more I look back at the goals we've conceded this season, the West Brom goal from Hickman Gardner, the strike from Jay Fulton at Swansea, they're all good shots, but none of them are top corner, unsavable, like world-class goals. They're all just long-range efforts that have kind of snuck past him. And it is a weakness of his, I think. It's a weakness of his in terms of his pace to get down to shots and to get across to shots. That is just one of the things that we kind of have to accept. He's not that good from long range. And we probably will concede more than we should, I think, from long range this season. It's just a bit unfortunate that that's going to be the situation.
But then close up, he's actually pretty fantastic. So it is hard, isn't it? There's like pros and cons to Joe Lumley, isn't there?
And he did kind of make up for it later in the half as well with a, I mean, there was a shot that was straight at him. I'm trying to remember who it was from, but it was from about 9-10 yards and it's straight at him, but he does well to kind of get it away and keep it away from danger as well, Alex.
Yeah, so I think that was about 80 minutes, 75, 80 minutes. And Burnley are probably on top, really, I think, after about 75, 80 minutes. And they are pushing for a winner here. And
it got quite open almost at that point, didn't it? It got quite end-to-end. And
yeah, Reading started pushing, Burnley started pushing. Both teams were looking for a winner. And I think that Burnley chance is hit straight at Joe Lumley, but he has to save that one. It does make up for the goal, sort of. It's a reasonable save, but it is hit kind of straight at him. And then Reading make a sub. I think Shane Long comes on with about 10 minutes to go, Matt. And the last 10 minutes, Reading are pushing. Like, I think Reading probably are the team who looked more likely to score in that last 10 minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, Hoylett has a great chance. It's not actually on the highlights, but Hoylett has a great chance at the back post with a header. Ball comes in, floats over to the back post. And I mean, I don't think I've ever seen Hoylett win a header, let alone out-jump someone at a back post. But my God, he leapt like a salmon. And it's just, for as good as his leap was, it was just a feeble header, really. I mean, we spoke about it on the way home, didn't we? And
he could score here. Like, most people aren't going to have seen this header, unfortunately, but there's a cross from the left-hand side. I think it's from Fauna, who's done really well to get to the byline. He's knocked it right to the back post, and Hoylett's out-jumped the left back on the six-yard box. And he's headed it pretty much directly at the keeper, and he's at an angle, Hoylett.
He heads it down, which, like, we had a discussion on the way back. Do you head it down there? Do you just go for power because of how close you are? He probably should have, like, most headers, people will say you head it back the way you came. You head it into the ground, make it hard for the goalkeeper. But you kind of think in that position when you're, you know, because he was actually probably like about 4 yards out. You know, he was really close. You just want to go for power near post, just get it in, you know. But like say, Alex, it's not on the highlights. It's probably one that might get forgotten somewhere, but it was a really, really good chance for Hoylett, this.
Yeah, it was a massive chance for Reading to go on and win the game. And we then had seven...
The elephant in the room, we'll say.
Yeah, we'll skip past that, but we'll come back to it. I think we had 7 minutes of injury time. And Burnley scored in, I want to say, like the fourth minute of injury time, something like that. Paul, the second Burnley goal, don't worry, people who are waiting for us to discuss the referee, we will come back to it because it's going to take us absolutely ages to go through it. But Paul, the second Reading goal that they conceded, Burnley's second goal, it's really frustrating to see because it's a ball that's kind of, it's a great cross with the outside of his foot, and it's one of those goals where you see it, and if another team scores it, oh, that's a good goal, pretty decent. And like you see your team concede, you're just absolutely just devastated in the last minute to watch that go in.
Oh, yeah, totally. You hate watching that goal. If you score it, you say, oh, shit, that's amazing. Bubba-Ram should A, foul him, block him, first of all, to get the cross in. And Junior Hoylett switches off at the back post, doesn't he? There's lots of skill there from Burnley. There's no doubt. I'm not saying there's no way that goal was lucky or anything. There's bits there that we could have improved on and we could have done more to stop it. It's a shithouse, isn't it, really? That one. It's really hard to talk about that goal and not talk about what happened before, because we all know that that was such a massive game-changing moment that we're going to talk about. We must talk about that. We need to get out of our systems. Because
okay, right. Well,
the elephant in the room has a rose. Here we go.
Let's just wrap up the second goal. I think Hoylett probably should do better here.
Yeah, definitely.
I think,
Hoylett should do better, maybe Lumley as well. I mean, I don't again want to come back to Lumley, but again,
he's, I don't think Lumley's got anything to do with it.
Yeah, but he's kind of running across his goal and he doesn't even really do anything apart from slide onto his knees. Like, I mean, he's not flung himself at it. Like, I mean, there's multiple people in this goal. Like you say, you could probably say he's accountable. Like Alex says, it's why it's probably so frustrating because Bubba should or someone should bring down the runner, you know, before they get before they even get to the box. You know, you should just foul in there, just take the yellow card. I know Loom's running over at a later stage as well. He can't foul because he would have obviously gone off, but
Rahman was on a yellow as well, but somebody should
at that point
okay, if you're Baba or Imam, you don't want to get sent off in a match and you will
I forgot
if you'd have brought him down and been sent off and we don't concede, would anyone really have cared?
Probably, because you got Luton away and you're already
it'd be a bit frustrating fire. But ultimately I guess if you save the point, you save the point. Right, like that's,
I would have taken it personally, but it's a big
take a red for the team, eh?
yeah
So I think it's a frustrating one. Hoylett probably should do better. Zarore gets probably a deserved goal, let's be honest, because I mean,
he was very
anybody
good.
Who listens to the preview would have heard the Burnley fan absolutely rave about him. He was ridiculous yesterday. Easily one of the best players that I've watched this season so far. And I'd be stunned if he's still playing at Burnley next season if they don't get promoted. But let's come back. We need to come back 25 minutes in the game first, because we'll discuss the refereeing decisions. Because I think there's three which we should discuss, and they're all penalty decisions and none of them are given. Matt, let's discuss the Burnley penalty. Actually, no, let's not discuss the Burnley one first. Let's discuss the main one first. Let's discuss the injustice that happened in the 92nd minute for Reading and has basically denied us the chances of getting all 3 points at Turf Moor.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were discussing it on the way. Well, it goes without saying we were discussing it on the way back yesterday. I mean, it's just like it's the fact that it's not even the fact that we could have got 3 points if a penalty gets given there. You know, it likely just probably peters out into a 1-1, even if it's saved. You know, like if that penalty is given, they don't score. You know, that's the biggest thing here. You know, because it's they score about a minute and a half after, you know, that penalty should have been given. And quite I just cannot understand how a referee and his linesman haven't given that. We said it when we were at one of the service stations, you know, having a bit of dinner. Like, it was, how many times do you not see an assistant referee actually, again, as Int says, have the balls to make a call? You know, because if the referee hasn't seen that, I don't know how the ref doesn't see it, because I mean, it's plainly in his line of sight. How on earth a linesman doesn't see it is just absolutely unbelievable. Like, I don't even see what the referee kind of thought has happened there. Like, I mean, if he thinks that Ince has somehow dived, it's like there's a yellow card going his way, but I mean, I don't even see how you can see a dive there.
So, I mean, there's going to be people who probably haven't seen it, so I'll kind of give you a little bit of a description here. It's the 92nd minute, I think, 93rd minute. Tom Ince wins the ball off the Burnley left-back Ian Matson just outside the penalty box on our right-hand side. He dashes back into the box and Ian Matson tries to tackle him from behind. And as he does, he basically just wipes his left leg out, knocking Tom Ince to the floor. He puts his hands up. You can see plenty of Burnley fans in the home end with their hands on their heads because they know it's a penalty.
That's one of the worst things. If you watch the highlights, have a look at the Burnley fans on the right, because almost probably like three quarters of them all just put their hands on their heads. I mean, everyone knows it's a penalty. Everyone knows it's a penalty. The ref, I've actually freeze framed it as well. The ref has a perfect line of sight between Hendrick and Yeardham. There is nothing that is obstructing his view. He's probably 15 yards away. No more than 15 yards away, and he has not seen it.
It's a fucking joke. That's what it is. You look at it and you think he's bottled it. He's absolutely bottled it, the ref, as Paul Ince said. If that's at the opposite end, he's given it.
It's not, I don't even think it's if it's at the opposite end. Any other minute of the day that that happens, that's given as a penalty. It's not even at the other end.
He's going to give it. Honestly, the pressure is there. He's going to give it
every other time. It's just, it's absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, I honestly, I can't see how, I've not seen anyone say it wasn't a penalty. Any Burnley fan. I mean, when you've got Vincent Kompany coming out and saying, yeah, it's a penalty. And obviously he can say that. He's in a position where he's
won the game, anyway, doesn't it? Matter. It's a nice, easy thing for him to say because they've gone and won the game.
Exactly. So you can think that's good of him, which it is, but ultimately it's very easy. But Vincent Kompany is a nice guy, so I don't have anything against him.
Fair play for saying it, but you've gone and won the game. So really,
Exactly. But come on. I remember doing the podcast with Bowen recently, and he said that referees cost points, and that is a classic example of how it's a game-changing moment. If we go there and we get the opportunity to score, and that's what it's all about. We don't know if we score, but if we do score, we go there 2-1. Imagine the confidence going through the team and, in some ways, more importantly for us, the fans. All of a sudden, we've gone to the top team and we've won 2-1. I mean, that is insane. I mean, no one would have expected that, really, at the beginning of the game. They'd hope for it. But it is, you just want them to do their job properly. And that was such an obvious penalty. It wasn't one of those ones when you look at it and think, oh, I'm not quite sure. It's like, come on. That is 100% a penalty.
And I mean, as Matt and Paul Ince have said, he said yesterday, the assistant referee is no further than 10 yards away. The fact that he hasn't got the balls to give that as a penalty and make a decision is so frustrating. And it just begs the question, what's the point? What's the point in having you as a linesman and an assistant referee if all you're doing is waving a flag to direct which way the referee's already given a decision?
I think the ref has got the most perfect view of that, because he can see that Mattson's behind. He's essentially side on to this, so he can see that Mattson is behind Ince. He can see that he's coming from behind on Ince. He can see that he's got nothing on the ball. You know, that like the ref has got the most It's probably the best thing he's done all game by being in the best position there, you know, to see that free, or to see the foul on Ince. And yet he's still not given it. You know, if you cannot make the simplest of decision like that, you should not be a referee. Pack your bags and go find a normal job. Like, seriously, it's utterly pathetic, you know, utterly. But the worst thing, he won't have any accountability, because there is like, you know, he'll just say in his post-match report, I didn't see it. Whoop-de-doo. He'll be refereeing in the championship this week, and it just gets swept under the carpet.
And you know it's going to be an apology coming in this week, don't you? You just know it. You know it, and it makes
keep the apology to yourself, EFL or ref. Seriously, I don't want to see you refereeing another fucking match in your life, because you're an utter disgrace.
So I will say, the Reading will get their share of luck as well with penalties going against them. Like, to give this a little tiny bit of balance, Reading will get their share of luck, because we have had moments as well this season where we should have given away a penalty. Sam Hutchin at QPR was a handball. We all saw it. QPR fans all saw it. The only person who didn't see it was the referee, similar to yesterday. But yesterday becomes such a joke because it's the 92nd minute in a game where it's 1-1. And how are you meant to justify that?
Defines a match.
Yeah. You know? It's the end of the match, and it defines what the result is going to be.
Alex, you are right about balancing out. There will be decisions, but it's fucking annoying, isn't it?
I think I'm just trying to give it a little bit of balance, because if you're going to call out the decisions which go for Reading, you need to have a little bit of balance and say, actually, yeah, we do get a little bit our way as well sometimes, because that's how it works. But ultimately, the ones which go against you are always going to be more frustrating, particularly when they're as like crappy as that decision. I mean, the refereeing, there was two other decisions, Matt, we'll quickly touch on. There was two other penalty shouts is a real like stretch here, during the game.
One of them.
So both of the Reading penalty shouts that were during the game ended with Burnley scoring about 90 seconds later. I think this one was about 65 minutes just before Burnley scored. And it comes out. The ball comes over from a corner on our right hand side. It bounces around a little bit in the box, and it definitely strikes an arm in the penalty box. I'm about 90% sure it's hit a Burnley hand or a Burnley arm. Yaku Mate seems convinced it hit a Burnley hand and is screaming for a penalty, but not many other players do. This one, I feel like you can kind of maybe give a little bit of a pass to the referee for, because it's one of the things that we would definitely get on a ref for if he gave a penalty here and he wasn't sure it hit a Burnley hand.
Yeah, I mean, like we discussed this one kind of on the way back, and I mean, at the time in the game, I actually I thought it hit Yaku Mate's hand, but then kind of when I think about it, it's Yaku Mate isn't going to be protesting the way that he protested if it hit his own hand, right? You know, and no Burnley player were, you know, they were all walking away quite sheepishly. You know, I guess like the one thing we kind of said, you, if you're a referee, you could probably look at the reactions there. And like, even if you think that it's hit a hand and it might have hit Mate's hand, Mate's not going to be walking away shouting for a penalty if it's hit his hand, and no Burnley player is going to be, you know, like not appealing if they think it's going to hit Mate's hand. So you could probably make an educated kind of decision there on, actually, this has hit a hand, it's probably going to have been a Burnley hand, looking at the reactions. But then, you know, we always, you know, get so frustrated when linesmen and referees, you know, not assume, but kind of
they base their decision off guess reactions, right?
Yeah, if they make it off reactions or guess. Yeah, it's yeah, but yeah, you know, it's well, Inn said it after, I can't remember the player it was on, but it's, you know, he seems pretty nailed on it. It was a blatant amble.
And then we'll discuss one more penalty decision, which this one is maybe a little bit of a stretch, Paul. The Burnley fans...
Don't say this to Burnley fans, please. They're incensed, seemingly, at this one.
The Burnley fans yesterday were a blatant penalty for Burnley in the first half, Paul. Absolutely ridiculous that it wasn't awarded. And frankly, it was just karma that Ince's penalty wasn't given. And I saw the video this morning, and I mean, how soft do you want to be? Holmes has wrapped his arms around a player at a corner, and they're calling it like it's the biggest injustice of all time here.
Yeah, I don't think that's a penalty. If you're giving ones for that every single week, wouldn't you? I mean, just imagine that if you were giving those. I mean, that's ridiculous. He has got his arms around him, but God almighty. If you're going to do any comparison compared to the last, like, 93rd minute one, that Wieg one, when he got hacked down, and like, there's just no comparison, is there? There really isn't. And
I mean, he's back four paces into home.
We say
as well.
It's Burnley fans, but it's some Burnley fans, isn't it? I think most Burnley fans are probably
if you look on Twitter, it's quite all over the RFC hashtag and BFC hashtag.
Yeah, I know, but momentum on Twitter doesn't mean anything's true. It really doesn't.
I just find it funny because half the Reading fans were thinking, what decision are they talking about? Like, I mean, there wasn't even that much of an appeal in the stadium at the time, for Christ's sake. You know, I mean, come on, get a grip. Like, it's just not a penalty. Like, I mean, like fair enough, you won. You've capitalized from, you know, you've got lucky at the end of the game with your penalty decision, but don't try and make up absolute bollocks about other penalty decisions in the game, because it just clearly wasn't. Your manager's not even spoken about it, not even mentioned it. You know, like, come on.
Here's something to drop in here. Sorry, Alex, to cut across you here, but I'm going to put in this idea in and just give a quick answer here, Matt. Not like
I think
a
I know
3 hour discussion.
Oh, we've had enough of these, I think, in the chat.
Yes or no?
Yes, no. You know my views on VAR. I'm probably the biggest advocate for it, kind of out of us. I know we all disagree on it, but I mean, refereeing is so bad in this division. You know, like VAR's being given to the Premier League because Premier League refs need help. And they're apparently the best referees in the country. If you're giving, you know, help to the best referees in the country, but they're not to the level below, like, I know then you'll say, well, how far do you trickle that down? But something needs to happen, and it needs to come in my opinion.
Well, it's not going to come in anytime soon. Unfortunately, it's not going to affect yesterday's result. But, Paul, I think that we can probably take, as fans and as players as well, the club can take quite a lot of pride from yesterday's performance, at the very least. Yes, performance doesn't equal points necessarily all the time, but we took Burnley to the end of the game. We probably should have at least had the opportunity to win the game there at the end. And it's very difficult to feel disheartened by the performance at all. I think it's one where we can't really be too down about the fact that we've lost necessarily, despite the fact that we have lost, because there's a lot of encouraging signs that you know, the fight is there and the quality is there, that we can go to these teams and we've got more than enough to pick up points against teams away from home this season. But unfortunately, we're moments away from being maybe 7 points better off. Like, the small moments have cost us so far.
Yeah, I think when you look at the objectives for the season, for me and for possibly a lot of Reading fans, is to stay up. Are we being competitive with teams at the top of the league? Yeah, we are. The teams, there's only one team at the top that's really thrashed us. I'm going to forget the Rotherham match because that was such a weird one. The Sheffield United game, they absolutely blitzed us. All the others, when we played against Swansea, QPR, Yes State, we've been in the game. We've been more than competitive. I think that we just need to pick up those points against kind of Preston next week. And that will not be simple as well. We just need to get to those kind of levels of 30 points, 32 points before we're going into the World Cup. And then we'll start to think, okay, relegation's looking pretty unlikely here. I don't think we should get too down after displays like yesterday. We're in the game. And I think it's a start of a process this season. We get through this season and then next season, hopefully with better recruitment set up, just better structure at the club, we start to move forward. I know that's a big kind of like look there, but it's easy to get too negative after all these losses that we all want to be at the top of the league, but I think we're going in the right direction.
It doesn't feel like we're a million miles away, Matt, from picking up these points away at the better teams in the league at the moment, does it?
No, like you said, like Paul has said, you know, it's frustrating kind of as these past couple of weeks and, you know, run of kind of 5-6 games have been, you know, only winning 1 out of 6 now. We've also taken a very good Norwich team, you know, to a good home draw as well. You know, there have been some very good performances in here and we've just been ever so close on certain occasions to actually getting a point, getting 3 points and, you know, some games like yesterday not really being of our doing in the end, you know, because if a decision's given, you might have got that win against a top team. But, you know, I think it's really key kind of for Reading fans, because we've got tough games coming up. Like, say, you know, you're away at Luton, who I think they're top four now, aren't they? You know, on a very good run. Not an easy place to go, kind of all throwed, you know, then Preston, very resilient team, and then Hull, you know, which we, even though they're down the bottom, they might be getting a new manager soon, you know, Liam Rossignol. And we also never seemingly beat Hull. They are one of our seemingly three bogey teams that we have. But, you know, when you look at kind of the games we have had, the performances that have been put in, you know, we're limiting these really, really good top championship teams to very few chances. People will say, well, we're playing defensive. Yeah, but we're actually playing pretty well defensively. So hopefully the luck might change at some point and we'll be able to, you know, pick up some points against these teams.
Yeah, fingers crossed in the second half of the season, we might be talking about some wins away at some of these teams.
It doesn't feel like we're too far away,
certainly. We've got Luton away on Tuesday. We've got Preston at home on Friday. Another spell of 3 games in 6 days. Thank you very much, Sky Sports, for that. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, do give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Give us a review. I will accept a 5-star review. Anything else is not really going to be particularly appreciated. But, you know, give whatever review you think is best. Join us again in midweek for the Luton review, and we'll be back then. Until then, have a great weekend and we'll speak to you very soon. Cheers.